good morning. Today is Friday, June the 10th. Normally, we get the senior mucky muck from Humble Bay Fire, but I guess we upgraded today, huh?
You could say that.
Yeah, well, nobody could hear it, though, unless you're on the mic.
Yeah, you could say that.
There we go. There you go. All right. So, mystery guest, please sign in. Who do we have this morning instead of Mr. Robertson?
So Chief Robertson's out of town today. So my name's Tim Citro. I'm a battalion chief paramedic with Humboldt Bay Fire.
You're a paramedic too?
I'm one of the three shift battalion chiefs, yes.
Oh, yes. Paramedic. Let's see if I can spell that word.
Yeah.
Paramedic. Okay. Are you ready for or why do we say that?
Let's hear it.
All right. A left-handed compliment. Why do we say a left-handed compliment?
I don't know. Because there's less left-handed people in the world? I don't know.
Okay. A reference to a left-handed compliment appears on the surface to refer to something laudatory said by a southpaw. But our everyday words and phrases often invite a look beneath the surface. In this case, such a peek takes us to medieval Germany. Trying to discourage romances between noblemen and commoners, legal barriers were created. If a man of blue blood married beneath his class, the special ceremony was used for the wedding. In such a rite, the groom was required to give the bride his left hand rather than the customary right hand.
Interesting.
To a visitor from abroad, the special ceremony seemed quite ordinary, but a left-handed marriage hardly deserved the name. Neither the man's wife nor their children could gain his rank or property. This state of affairs led anything whose surface appearance was deceiving to be called left-handed. After the 16th century, the left-handed wedding ceremony was seldom performed, but it made such a lasting impression that you get a left-handed compliment when offered an insult that masquerades itself as praise.
Well, there you go.
See?
Learn something new every day. I like it.
I use my right hand. What'd you use?
When what?
Marriage.
Well, you know.
Yeah, but if you think hard, you're going down the drain. Yeah,
right hand, but wedding rings are on the left hand. Yeah. That is related to that.
I would suspect that most people are right-handed and they use the right hand as their primary work function.
Yeah.
Like the sword.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting some of the quaint customs that come into play and what doesn't. So, Tim, normally this time of the year it's fire danger, fire blah, 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 and I think everybody's kind of aware that we're drought and that some parts of the state are already in water restriction.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear that kind of stuff, knowing particularly with the history that we've had regionally with the fires, shallow breathing, a little bit of pause for concern?
Well, it just means that we're going to have probably a longer fire season is what I would think. You know, the winter wasn't as wet as we'd liked, although we have had some late rains. But
that just kind of serves to water the grass,
water
right?
the grass, basically. Yeah. But we still plan ahead of time for what our role is going to be in the fire season as a fire agency assisting Cal Fire throughout the state. So usually around April, March, we do all our wildland fire refresher training, get all our personnel trained, get them refreshed on everything. Our specific fire engine that we send out, our Type 3 fire engine, the big four-wheel drive engine that we send out.
To the hinterlands, yes.
To the hinterlands, we get it all. Our maintenance folks get it all ready to go, get it tuned up, and so it's ready to go. Our personnel are ready.
Now, do you have a predetermined selection of who goes for those, or is it a volunteer or guys that are on days off? I mean, how do you arrive at the lucky three or five that get
to go? So the way we do it is we basically every shift, so we work a 48, 96-hour shift. So that means we work 2 days on and then we get 4 days off. And what we do is at the first day of the first thing in the morning on the first day of a shift, we ask everybody who's on duty who would like to go if it gets called. So we ask for volunteers.
And so it can change weekly.
Weekly. Yeah. So usually we get a list of volunteers and we get that from all three shifts and we hold that list and we just keep resetting it. based on people's vacation, personal plans, availability, all those types of things. So we usually have a pretty good list of volunteers who are willing to go or come in off duty to go. Our goal is to get that engine out within a half an hour when it's called.
So I would think that that would be more the troops in the station rather than having
sometimes
somebody
but
drive
no, we can get people coming in.
Or do they meet en route?
No, they come in, but all their gear is ready. They're out of county bags is what we call it, with all their personal gear and everything they need. It's all ready to go.
I believe they call it a go bag,
go
right,
bag.
For you
they
guys?
They just grab it and throw it on, and they're off. And if we don't have volunteers, whatever station that engine is at, which right now is at our Harris Street station, Station 5, if that crew's on duty and it gets called, it doesn't matter what time of day. It could be 2 in the morning. You're rock and roll.
Yeah.
So last year, for example, we got called to the Dixie Fire at 2 in the morning. So my phone rings at 2 in the morning. I'm on duty. I answer it. It's Cal Fire requesting our engine to just go. So not even in a strike team. Just start heading that way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I wake up the crew over there and said,
showtime.
Showtime. Yeah. Get your stuff on and you're off. And they were out of there by 2:30 in the morning. They arrived in base camp about 8 in the morning and got put on the line, and we were there for 3 weeks. So that's how rapidly your time can change. So
yeah, it's not nearly as sexy as some of the other stuff either. Mm-mm. You know, if there's not a ladder truck involved, but working out in the heat for a prolonged period.
Yeah, they were there for 3 weeks.
They don't rotate?
We can rotate crews. Our expectation is when you sign up or you're sent, that you are committed for 2 weeks. And then after that time, we will rotate other people out.
That's about as long as you can go.
As long as you can go. And if there's circumstances for personal reasons or anything like that, we'll try and get somebody else out there. But, again, that all has to be approved by Cal OES because we're now being hired by them. The incident has to approve it, personnel changes, all those types of things.
Oh, really? So it's like a 4 or 5 step process?
It takes a process, but we're up on it, and it happens a lot. You got to remember.
I think birthdays, anniversaries, graduations,
that kind of
stuff. Yeah.
And I've been on fires, you know, these large fires in Northern California where you have strike teams from Beverly Hills. You know, so they're.
Oh, you better give them a hard time.
Yeah, so they're trying. So they have to rotate people out from that place.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Tim Citro from Humboldt Bay Fire. Tim, this time of the year also is budgeting, planning, as well as the execution part.
Yeah.
Do you get involved with the numbers at all?
not too much. more with just what I'm responsible for. Submit the needs to the boss, and then he... gets all that information
together. It still is the chief's responsibility.
Still the chief's responsibility. He puts everything together and then
I can remember
presents it to the board and
gets
approved or gets changed.
I remember Ken Woods having to do just piles.
Chief Woods around budget time was just
all over the desk.
You just stayed away for a while.
Yeah.
You just let him be.
Come in. Having fun. But see, I can leave.
Mm-hmm.
You guys don't have that luxury. What is the biggest surprise that people outside the department family would have if they were able to shadow you for the next 2 weeks?
I think, people still think of the fire department as just a traditional fire department, for example. That's what we do, is just fire. And we do a lot more than that. And I know Sean has talked about it a lot. But with everything that we do, not only reactively, just responding to calls, but what we do proactively to try and help stop the calls from even happening is very important to our mission now. And it's not just fire related, it's medical related, it's everything. So a couple of things that we're working on right now, as you know, Eureka Police Department, they have their CSET team. They're really good. When we go on medical calls in the community and we need them, they respond and help and provide the resources, because it may not necessarily be a medical issue that this individual needs help with. So Sergeant LaFrance from EPD has put together this, it's called the ART team. I don't know if you've heard of it yet. It's been out in the media a little bit. It's called the Alternative Response Team.
When Lenny was here.
When Lenny was talking about it, yeah. And so basically what that involves, it's more of a mental health crisis response team. So instead of sending, you know, police officers to people who have mental health needs, it's more of sending these specially trained teams that are through the police department, but they're not, you know, armed police officers. And that's something that's becoming more common nationwide as you see the needs of the communities change. So,
yeah, the recognition of the mental health.
Exactly.
It's challenges. It's and it's we huge. See them.
We see them.
We just don't recognize it necessarily.
And so Lenny approached us because there's also a medical component to that. So there is a mental health component, a social work component, and a medical component to this team. So we needed paramedics to be able to go out with this team and do the medical clearance and medical assessment of these individuals that need this assistance. So we are involved in doing that now.
How many paramedics are there in the department?
Oh, boy. Right now we have 12, and we have another 3 that have just finished school and are starting their internships, and we have another one going to school starting in August.
So you're getting kind of halfway close to 50%?
Our goal isn't to get 50% of our personnel as paramedics. Our goal is to try and get every company, every engine and truck company to the paramedic level. We're not there yet. We're still considered part-time. So, for example, today, 3 of our 5 companies have paramedics on them. Tomorrow, I think it's going to be 2 or 3 again. There's days when everyone is, every company is, and there's days when we maybe just have 1. And that's allowed, and we've doing that. The paramedic training is a lot more extensive than the EMT training. So it takes a lot more commitment, and hiring entry-level firefighter paramedics, there's a lot less of them than there are just firefighter EMTs.
So is it almost I don't want to say it's like a nurse, but getting close? I mean, the training is very similar to nursing rather than fire?
It's not so much nursing. It's more emergency-related, where you can do more emergency advanced skills.
Like the triage?
Triage. So, for example, the paramedic training is about 18 months long, whereas EMT training is only about 5 months long. There's a big difference in the skill level. Paramedics can start IVs, intubate. You know, we carry cardiac monitors that can defibrillate and cardiovert and monitor pulse oxes and all kinds of things.
Oh, drop that jargon, big boy.
Yeah. we can give over 40 medications in the field, things like that. So it's a lot higher.
Can you work with the chemicals for the psychiatric response or outbursts?
Not so much. Are you talking about opioids and things like that?
Yeah, something to bring them down or?
Well, not specifically. We do carry Narcan. You know, we've always have. That's always been at the paramedic level, and now it's at the EMT level. Now it's even to the just basic first aid level with the police officers carrying now. So it's out there in the community a lot more, which is a good thing. It's very positive. So the paramedic training is a lot more extensive. It just takes a lot longer. But
you don't move into that range of if somebody's having a psychotic break. That's really not what you guys handle.
No, but as far as this ART team goes, they still need, it's required that they have this medical component to make sure that there is no underlying medical conditions that need to be treated before the mental health aspect comes into play. So that's kind of where we fall into it. So we are working with them to try and provide that. And
talk about mixing cultures, huh?
It's okay.
Not cops and fire.
That's what we do now.
Mental health. That would be the source of a lot of humor.
Absolutely.
KINS News Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:36. We're back talking shop this morning with Humble Bay Fire Battalion Chief Tim Citro. Tim, the concept of proactiveness.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You guys have got the folks that go out and they walk through the retail stores mm-hmm. and make sure that the exits
sure.
aren't blocked and
yep.
blah, blah, blah. Okay. And the sprinklers mm-hmm. now, that's all part of.
Yeah.
But I would think that some of the cultural things that you've been kind of
yeah.
touching on. That's not infrastructure. That's something entirely different. How challenging is it working with mercury that
yeah.
you can't really put your hands on a daily basis like that? Because it's not
yeah.
put out the fire. It's not
sure.
help that person in the car crash.
Yeah.
This is all different.
It's different, but it's the way I believe we can best serve the community. So, you know, our traditional, what we call fire prevention services that we've, provided for years, fire inspections, plan checks, things like that. We still do those things. But now what we're focusing on is actually true, what we call community risk reduction. And that involves all aspects of the community and what can we do proactively to add value to the community. So here's some examples. So 70 to 75% of the calls we go on are medical in nature. Okay. So
not the old person who's fallen down and can't get up.
All
that one doesn't count.
No, it does.
Is that a medical?
Those are medical calls.
Okay.
So that's a lot. Okay. That's a lot of calls we're going on in the community for that. So how can we proactively help with that? How can we do things with the resources that we have so people aren't calling 911 as much for medical emergencies. We teach CPR classes. We provide first aid classes. We teach stop the bleed classes now in the use of tourniquets, all those types of things. When we go into people's homes and they've slipped and fell and hurt themselves, we may refer them to the Area 1 Agency on Aging or even ourselves, move a towel or a rug out of the way, something they slipped on to help prevent those types of things. And it's capturing and formalizing those things and making them true programs within our department that we can address those things. So here's an example. Let's say we go on a medical aid for an elderly fall victim and they've fallen and broken their hip. Okay. If you think about the cost to the community and every aspect in the community that has to be a part of that, we have the fire department response. You have the response from the private ambulance company and the transportation. You have the emergency room. You're going to have the surgery. You're going to have the stay at the hospital. You're going to have rehabilitation. You're going to have transportation, and the impact on the family just from one maybe preventable slip and fall. Think about how much money is involved in that entire thing. So, and it's not just the money, it's the pain and suffering of the individual and the family and the inconvenience.
The mental
all
aspects of it, yeah.
So if we can go into assisted living facilities, care homes, even people's residences and help and do slip and fall prevention, and we can prevent 10 of those a year, think about how much value that adds to the community.
And that's a pretty low number, certainly achievable.
But it's achievable, those types of things, even if it's just one person. Have we done what we should be doing? So those are the types of things that we're trying to get involved in and not just saying, hey, our call numbers are going up, we need more money. It's not that simple.
With this different approach,
yeah,
a proactive preventative, are the insurance companies on board? Because I would think, you know, you could argue either camp. Yeah, they're right there because they see the opportunity to save pain and revenue. And the other side, maybe they're not able to generate as much revenue on the growth side.
Sure.
And employ their staff.
Sure. And here's the thing. So let's look at it from the traditional fire prevention standpoint. We have a rating from the insurance services office of, you know, what our rating as a fire department is to provide fire protection for insurance purposes, for home insurance and things like that. So they're already involved in us in a little bit in how well we provide fire protection. And with the recent, well, I'm not going to say recent, in the past 20 years with the wildfires in California, you've seen them even get more involved, the insurance companies and those types of things, with where people build and providing coverage and things like that. So they are involved in the fire side of it. So we do see that. And I haven't seen any negative effects from insurance companies or anything like that in what we do so far.
Are they at the table?
Not yet. Not from the medical perspective, but from the fire perspective, they always have been. But they've always worked with us, you know, in rating us and our levels of fire protection and what we do, and things like that.
So, I'm just curious if there's a recognition.
I understand what you're saying.
Because you guys have got the relationship already established.
Yeah, I don't think it's gotten that far yet.
But you could see that happening down the road?
It could, sure. It could. It could happen down the road. And
sure, it could happen.
It could happen. We'll see.
I think the confidence level on that one's about a 1 on the 10 scale.
We'll leave it at that. Yeah.
Oh, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to 7 cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:46. Sorry, I didn't mean to wake everybody up there.
Yeah.
We're back talking shop this morning with Tim Citro, Battalion Chief for Humboldt Bay Fire.
Yeah.
Tim, you mentioned during the break that you are one of the guys that came over from Hubbard.
Oh, from Humboldt Fire District, yes.
Yeah. Has that pretty much become historical now?
It has. Culturally, yes. I will say it has. You know, politically, we still have our two parent agencies, you know, Humboldt Fire District, City of Eureka.
That's part of the structure.
That's part of the structure that's designed. But culturally within the organization, what we call the, we call ourselves, you know, the original employees. There's not many of us left. The merger took place in 2011. So that was 11 years ago.
Really? It was that long ago?
It was that long ago.
Geez, if we had only brought dispatch under this at the same time.
Yeah. So there's still a few of us, but those cultural differences are pretty much gone. We are a new, better organization now.
I would figure if somebody still had an issue, they wouldn't be in the department. They would have moved.
They'd be in the minority. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. So you probably even have to educate.
Sometimes
a lot of the newbies that, hey, this is the history of our department.
It's interesting. We do that. And some of the newer employees we've just hired, actually, they'll ask because we still have some of our apparatus are still yellow, you know.
Why are the colors?
Why are those yellow? Oh, well, here's why. Or why do these two stations look so different from these other three stations?
Because they're like, unique.
Because, yeah. But the fact that it's actually historical now is a good thing.
Oh, that's got to be such a relief.
It is. So, but to be able to tell our newer employees some of that background and that history, it's pretty neat. And
you know what that makes you?
I know exactly.
Okay,
what it
good.
Makes
well,
me.
We'll just kind of keep moving then.
It's. When I was 25 years ago when I started, I know exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
What it makes me,
what are the questions that I've got? What are the plans? I know the Kent and some of the old folks are working on it. But the old fire station next to Eureka High, I mean, it really is starting to look rough on the outside.
Yeah, so I do know that we still have several employees and retirees that still really look after. It's what we call Station 6. And some of our antique apparatus are stored in there. Actually, the old city's antique apparatus and the old district's antique apparatus are stored in there. And I do know that it's still a city-owned building, is my understanding. So the maintenance that goes in, and there is I think a community or neighborhood fund that helps support it, the Friends of the J Street Firehouse.
Yeah, there's some kind of a opportunity.
So I know Ken is really involved in that. And any time that something needs to be done or fixed, you know, immediately or something, we will go over there and help and do it and at least do it. I hope there's plans in place to improve it a little bit, maybe paint it or do something like that.
Yeah, so. Geek on that kind of stuff, and the history is slipping away. Yeah,
it is
not the cultural history because I mean that stuff you can research and find, but the physicalness of it. And I've always hassled Ken about it too.
Yeah,
that structure ought to be used for something on a regular basis, not once a year, open house kind of thing.
Sure,
but something so that there's some life breathed into it, whether it's
people understand it. They know what it's about, how long it's been there,
That it is there.
Yeah, even that it is.
I mean, it's really easy to drive down J Street and not see it.
Sure.
It's one of those things that should not be lost.
Sure.
So I just was curious if there's any active plans going on, or if it's still kind of it's that other thing that's.
I think it's still the other thing, but it is getting taken care of. I do know it's not being neglected, let's put it that way.
Good. And I suppose if anybody wants to help out, you could call.
Absolutely.
Call the front number, not the three-digit number,
the front number, yes, the business office, yeah.
And either spend some time or drop some money on it and see what they can get done.
Mm-hmm.
So as things are changing,
mm-hmm.
how significantly impactful has that been on the training? Yeah, you got the training facility down by the water.
Sure, yeah.
And you got the tower and mm-hmm. the modules and all the blah, blah, blah. But that's not what we've been talking about today.
It's interesting you say that. So in this calendar year, we've hired 4 new firefighters, 2 at a time separately. So we've had to do 2 separate recruit academies is what we call them. And they take about 6 to 8 weeks to put new employees through this. And the majority of their recruit academy time is spent on firefighting.
Right, traditional.
Throwing ladders, pulling hose,
okay.
Rescuing people from that type of stuff, because that is still important, and that is something that you need to physically train on and have the repetition in, because
yeah, the muscle memory has to be there.
The muscle memory has to be there. And we don't have as many fires as we used to because we are doing a good job.
Yeah, if you're doing
exactly
the proactive, you don't have as much reactive.
But when we need those skills, we need to make sure they're there and that our newer employees have them and that they can perform them. So that is a majority of our recruit academy. When they get out and they get assigned to a company and they're on probation and they're working with a captain, that's when we start to influx these other things into them. More of on the job, and they can visibly see those effects and engage the community, you know, with their assigned captains and
basic skill set, and then you develop out.
Exactly, exactly. We still have to have that foundation.
More modules for training too?
We're getting there. Yes, some mandated, some things like that.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Kind of as a final, is there more training?
Yes.
As you're on the job.
Yes.
Which means you have to become more efficient.
Yep.
On the other stuff.
There always is. Yep. There's always more we're doing.
Well, make sure the city doesn't burn down while you're in charge, huh?
I always try not to.
Yeah. Thanks for coming by, Tim.
Thank you.
See everybody on Monday.